Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. People in Mecklenburg County love their parks. When we experienced the Great Recession and civic leaders were searching for ways to save money, citizens made their voices heard. They pleaded with those leaders to provide necessary funds for two entities, the public libraries and our parks. Although we continue to be told by national ratings organizations that we are underparked for a growing city our size, Mecklenburg County has 290 parks, nature preserves, greenways, and facilities spread over more than 22,500 acres. And the person in charge of all that is new to town. Well, relatively so. Nick Walker has been here since February. In his last job, he ran the parks for the city of Memphis, a slightly smaller network of parks, playgrounds, and other facilities, including a zoo. Well, there's no zoo here. At least not one with animals in it. But Mecklenburg is looking to open two new parks this year, renovate seven others, open a new museum, reopen a skate park, and add nearly 4 miles of additional greenways. It's a lot. And Nick Walker, the director of Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation, is here to tell us all about it, give us his initial impressions of what he's found since his arrival, and more. Welcome to the program. Welcome to Charlotte. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you on both accounts. Happy to be here, both in Charlotte and on the radio this morning.
You know, in the 2025 Park Score report from the Nonprofit Trust for Public Land, something we talk about almost every year on the show as the new report comes out, Charlotte ranked at number 90 after having come in at number 87 last year and 85 the year before, which means that we are dropping. And Memphis came in at 70. So I have to ask you, what attracted you to this job?
Well, first of all, just some context for your listeners. We certainly value the interactions that we have with the Trust for Public Lands. I think in terms of their role in the conservation space, they're an incredible organization. I posted something on LinkedIn a little while back, which was just a culmination of thoughts about the study in general. Because again, as you pointed out, Memphis traditionally in the 70s and 80s, likewise, this agency, again, in the 80s and 90s. And I think that it's more of a reflection on the difficulty in taking one set of standards and applying it to the largest 100 agencies in the country. I think probably the best corollary would be, and you've probably heard this, it's like in some ways taking a look at law enforcement statistics and applying them to a broad generalization. It's difficult. And we, Mecklenburg County, are kind of a unicorn among unicorns when it comes to that because of the size of the agency. We are graded on the seven entities that make up Mecklenburg County, which is nearly 500 miles of land mass. And so when you compare that to a municipality like DC, which has a plethora of parks, but is in a relatively small parcel of land, it just becomes difficult because you're not necessarily comparing apples to apples. I just think there's a lot of minutiae and inside baseball that goes into it. But I'll also tell you that, again, I think it's a disservice to Charlotte and the greater Mecklenburg community to say that we're 90th out of 100. When in reality, I think when you talk to most park professionals, we're solidly one of the 10 to 20 best park systems in the U.S. And so that's sort of my take on it. And also one of the large reasons why I came here, because, again, I think that aside from that study, if you look at the ways that we measure ourselves, and you talk to my colleagues at other large agencies across the country, they would tell you, there are a lot of municipalities that are envious of the resources that we have here. Yeah. and the intentionality that goes into the decisions that we make.
For people who don't know, and we have talked about this almost every year for several years now, that the Trust for Public Land describes its annual report as the most complete and in-depth look at U.S. city park systems and one that sets up a friendly competition among cities. That's their description of themselves. Where we constantly lose points is on access. They say the average distance most people are willing to walk to a park is 10 minutes, or roughly a half a mile. In the 100 most populous cities, 76% of people live within that 10-minute distance, but in Charlotte, it's only 39%. I know that you've been here for only 6 months, but can that really be changed given the way Charlotte has grown, the fact that we are a car-centric city, in which growth and development have already taken up a lot of land, and we don't have a lot of transit options at the moment? So if you don't have a car and you're not within a, you certainly within a 10-minute drive of a park, but if you don't have a car, it could be challenging. Are we being downgraded needlessly?
I think you're exactly right. Charlotte, outside of pockets of the city, because it's been developed over different generations and different times, we're not set up on a grid system. And so, that being said, you find things like 4-lane and 6-lane roads that make it difficult to get from one neighborhood to the other, that are just going to be an impediment to us ever really moving up meaningfully in that score. Ironically, or rather unironically, we're meeting with the folks at Trust for Public Land later this week to have a conversation about some of our thoughts on this, because I think there are ways to meaningfully take a look at the performance of agencies that aren't necessarily in their scope. There's ways to measure us against similar municipalities in a way that could spur a lot of the things that they are aiming to do. But to your point, no. I mean, is the short answer. We, as an agency, if you take a look at those studies as well, we have added acreage to our inventory at a pace which far outpaces really the rest of the United States. Since, 2018, 2019, we've been very intentional about acquiring land for recreational and leisure purposes, which I think.
Which actually surprised me. I want to talk about that. It actually surprises me because in January, before you got here, Bert Lynn, who was Capital Planning Division Director at Park and Rec, told Axios Charlotte, quote, "The biggest place where we're going to improve our scores by acquiring new land for new parks." And he said that the system had closed on a number of properties for new parks and greenway trails to protect natural resources. Given the value of commercial of any land in Charlotte, how difficult is it to accomplish this acquisition of land?
It's very tricky because at the same time, it's also not, we are sort of restricted in a lot of the ways that developers are as well. A parcel really needs to be a parcel that adds to the quality of life for the people in Charlotte and Mecklenburg County. And so when you take that, you combine that with the fact that we are fighting against housing developers, commercial developers, really anybody and everybody. It is a very difficult ask, but also at the same time, I think it's important to remember that it's a task that really only we can undertake, because that is one of our roles in government, is to make sure that we are protecting land and protecting the quality of life for people in Mecklenburg County, because it extends to the quality of our streams, and it impacts the quality of our air. And there's a lot of stuff that goes into it that, frankly, I'm not really qualified to talk about. But I will say that I think it speaks to the larger point about, why the quality of life here is so good. And it's because people are intentional about that, and we're thinking about that and trying to make decisions, not just for the next 5 to 10 years, but 20, 30 years. What will Charlotte look like, and how do park and recreation fit into that spectrum?
Some cities in our situation where land is at a premium and they're kind of landlocked because cities have become what they are, have open ball fields and tracks and things like that at local public middle and high schools after hours and on weekends to citizens to use. Do we do that? Is that something we should do if we don't?
We do. We actually have a very good partnership with CMS. They have, in a lot of ways, similar goals to us in terms of having a healthy and active community. And so we partner with them on access to ball fields and tracks. And likewise, we work with them to accommodate their needs as well. Because I think if you were to talk to the superintendent and others in CMS, they're facing a lot of the same challenges that we are. And so that's actually a great partnership. And it's one that we meet, one or two times a month to have these conversations about how can we be intentional when we're looking to go into an area and CMS is looking to go into an area. Can we find a way to use joint use facilities and make sure that everyone in community benefits from county investment? Because at the end of the day, we also have a lot of budgetary tie-ins. A lot of land acquisition that is done by Charlotte-Mecklenburg Schools is done using county dollars. And so how do we leverage our buying power and how do we leverage our planning strategies to make sure that when a development goes in, that there's adequate recreational space and adequate educational space? And from what I can tell, 6 months in, it's a really good partnership.
One of the reasons Charlotte has been moving down on this list, we're going to move off this list in a second, but one of the reasons that Charlotte has been moving down, and we've talked about this in the past, is that not so much we're getting worse at what we do. In fact, we're getting better. It's just that other cities are moving up. And I'm just curious how they're doing that, because many other cities are in the same situation that we are. They're kind of landlocked. Cities by nature have valuable real estate. How are they moving up? What are they doing that we're not doing if we're moving down?
Well, I think one of the things that we have to be careful on is, and my dad was an educator for many years, and the concept of teaching to the test, while that can have benefits, particularly from a financing and a PR perspective, at the end of the day, I think that our true North Star will always be improving the lives of people in Mecklenburg County. A park and recreation agency is what we refer to as a quality of life division. So, police, fire, public housing, those sorts of things are really focused on community services. Economic development is focused on bringing businesses here, those sorts of things. I always say, at the end of the day, those agencies are focused on bringing people here. My agency is focused on keeping people here. And so, to me, the ones that have done a really good job have balanced those two things. They work with agencies like the Trust for Public Land and others to say, what sort of steps can we take? What are some creative and innovative ways we can do to get our score up? But at the end of the day, I am much more concerned with what our residents and users think. Do they see the improved quality of our programming? Do they see the intentionality of our access and things like our therapeutic recreation programs and vehicles that allow differently abled people to go out to our nature preserves? If they feel that quality, once a year we can have a conversation about a number on a piece of paper. But to me, it is, are we making meaningful progress in becoming one of the best park systems? And I think if we balance those two, we'll see that score go up.
Nick Walker is the relatively new director of Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation. He arrived here in February from Memphis, and I'm sure that when prior to coming here, prior to even being willing to apply for this job, or I don't know whether you applied or they sought you out, but I'm sure you did your homework. So when we come back from the break, I want to find out what about this park system attracted you and has what you thought you knew about Charlotte Park and Recreation turned out to be the case once you arrived and got your feet wet? We'll do that when we come back. And we have a lot of things to talk about, including those vehicles that you just mentioned that I was completely unaware of that allow people who are handicapable, who are in wheelchairs, to use our nature trails. It's something very unique to Charlotte. We're coming right back.
Support comes from WFAE listeners and the British International School of Charlotte. Their curriculum aims to develop curiosity among middle schoolers and help them foster skills like critical thinking, collaboration, problem solving, and social awareness. More at bischarlotte.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Nick Walker's our guest. He's the director of Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation. He arrived on the job from Memphis in February. I'm sure you did your homework before you came here and looked into what we had to offer and what we do offer and made a decision about whether or not you wanted to come here. So is what you learned prior to arrival, does it match what you found?
Yeah, and I think again, hopefully we've turned the page on the conversation about TPL. But again, I think in my mind, in the conversations I had with other park leaders and people who have worked here, is that, again, this is really one of the best park systems in the U.S. We have an intricate trail of greenways that's expanding every day. The breadth and depth of what we do in our programming is really incredible. And I think that what I've discovered in the first 6 months is that it was really as advertised. There are a lot of dedicated men and women who work really hard every day to continue to make sure that there are opportunities for everybody in this community. And it's going to take me a lot longer than 6 months, but I really have, again, found a spirit of cooperation and innovation and servant leadership that makes me proud to call these people my colleagues.
Whenever anybody who is in a managerial position comes into any new job, they have their own ideas and they change things up to suit what they think ought to be done. If they're smart, they do a little listening first, a little digging around, a little seeing, getting the lay of the land. I'm sure you've done that. And then they start making changes. You've been here for a while. Is that your approach? And do you see things that you would like to do that could make these parks better?
Yeah, no, and I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that I've worked for a variety of bosses in my life, and I've found that the best ones really balanced what you talked about at the beginning. Because, again, as someone who moved here many moons ago, you know, almost 40 years now, I lived in the Carolinas for about 6 years growing up. And while that did kind of inform me a lot of the ways on just how much great access there is to nature and the different environments that we have access to here. There's not a lot of places outside of California where 3 hours you can be on the beach and another 3 hours you can ski. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean that I knew exactly what was going on and what people were trying to do and weren't always necessarily given the agency or empowered to do. There are a lot of things that I'm looking forward to doing. I really am driven because I've seen the benefits of it, of us programming our spaces more outdoors. I think it's really incredible when you can find a way to activate spaces, you know, whether it is to change behavior or it is just to foster that sense of community. I think when we activate our parks, it pays dividends on a level that is just incredible. And so, again, coming in from the outside, I would have gone like, man, I really wish we were doing more of this. But as you talk to staff, they're saying the same thing. They're going, man, I want us to do more of this. And so what I've found is that as it relates to my strategy and the things that I'd like for us to do, in a lot of ways, it's just going to be to support staff and say, what do you want to do? What do you sense? Because at the end of the day, you live in these communities. You interact with the patrons and our residents at a level that, frankly, I just can't. I mean, there's 1.2 million people that we serve. And so when you talk to the staff, they have a lot of great ideas, and it's finding ways to foster that sense of community. And again, it's going to be as it relates to equity and all the terms that entails, because it's not just racial or socioeconomic, it's physical ability, it's age, it's across the spectrum. And making sure that we continue to push that, I think is really going to be my driving focus.
I mentioned at the very beginning that during that economic downturn that has come to be known as the Great Recession, Mecklenburg County leaders and city leaders were all looking for ways to cut things because there simply wasn't money to do what we had been doing prior to that. It was a temporary blip in the economy, but nonetheless, it was serious. And when people came out to talk about what they were pleading for the county not to cut. One of them was parks. The other was libraries. And I'm not kidding. It actually surprised people how passionate our citizens were about the parks and what the parks give them. So how do you know what people want today from parks and the greenways and all the things that you provide?
It's again, good timing. We are currently, parks work off of what we call a master plan. And again, going back 30, 40 years ago, they were these coffee table books that you would do every 20 years. And they would talk about your capital strategy, programming, all those sorts of things. But they've evolved over the last couple of decades in park and recreation. And now you essentially start a new one every 10 years. But after 5 years, you take a step back and go, have we accomplished the things that we set out to do? And what has changed in the community over the last 5 years that means we might need to make some changes to our strategy? And we are currently in the process of beginning the work to do our five-year update. And the way that you do it is, although the technology and the terminology has changed somewhat, it's good old-fashioned going out and talking to the people in the community. It's holding community engagement. It's putting out surveys. It is listening to the constituents and then gathering all that data and taking a look at where are the gap areas where we need to be intentional about land acquisition and development. And where are the areas where we've done a good job and addressed a lot of the needs? And again, the preliminary results that I've seen just from conversations with the team is that we've done a pretty good job over the last 5 years. Some of the community's desires and wants for different amenities and those sorts of things have changed, but a lot of them are still the same. And so it's balancing those two and then coming up with a refreshed strategy to approach how we do things over the next 5 years. And again, our hope is to start kicking off some of that community engagement this fall and have a draft of that plan in the spring.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I know you're working on this now, but this refresh of the master plan, but I understand that mm-hmm. you have some concerns about having the same firm that did the master plan back in 2021 doing it again. If that's true, why?
No, I would say that I think that anybody that's involved in this type of planning is very passionate about the outcomes and the strategy that gets you there. And so there's, again, speaking of inside baseball, there's a bunch of different strategies that you can take to how do you go through this process. We've been really focused on saying at the end of the day, the staff that have been here, and again, I'm blessed because the bulk of the staff here, particularly in sort of the middle management and up, has been here 10, 12, 15 years. And so they've been entrenched in this community. They've done the day-to-day work. And so a lot of the information that they have is really the core of how we do this work. The contractors and the consultants that we use to facilitate that work are really kind of the tools that we use in order to have the end product. But I don't necessarily have a concern with having the same group. Honestly, if I take a look back at it, because I went through this process myself, both Mecklenburg County and the city of Memphis did their master planning efforts at the same time. Mm-hmm. And like everybody else, COVID just made everything exponentially harder, and particularly community engagement. It was hard to get people to coalesce around something when they were trying to figure out how were they going to order their groceries and what was going on with them economically. So the world is very different today than it was in 2020. And so I think if there's any heartburn, it is around what does engagement look like now and how are we intentional about it? But at the end of the day, which pencil and piece of paper we use to do this is way less important to me than do we get the feedback that we need and how are we able to to produce a plan on the backside of that.
And the reason we need this master plan, you point out that we've experienced, this area has experienced what you call insane growth, and I'm not sure anybody would disagree with you on that, because 117 people move here every day. At least that's the last figure that I saw. And you have said that our needs are always going to exceed our ability to fulfill those needs. So we have to prioritize what we're going to do next. And the way you do that is through this master plan, correct?
Correct. I had a great boss with a military background, which means that he was big on sayings and idioms. But he was absolutely correct when he said it. If you have too many priorities, you have no priorities. And so with that in mind, we have to make sure that we get meaningful impact from the decisions that we make and the actions that we do. And that starts by having a true North Star. And I think we're going to find that. Because again, at the end of the day, a lot of the things that we heard in 2020 are still true. We need more access to open space in this county. We need better connection. We need better greenways. We need to improve the existing recreation and leisure facilities that we have, and we need to build some new ones, because there are communities today, north of 10,000 people that didn't exist in 2018, 2019. This city, the last number I heard was 159, which again is a lot of people. And so we've got to make sure that we are making the cornerstones for those communities, while at the same time, not turning a blind eye to the fact that a good number of the properties that were transferred over to the county in 1993 still need attention and love. And so we got to balance those two things. And if we do it right, that love that you talk about for parks and recreation will continue, because it shows that we're listening and we're being adaptive to their needs.
So you're in charge of over 22,000 square acres, 22,500 acres. It's a lot of territory to cover around the county and to keep in shape. Are there challenges that you face? Are they equally distributed around the county, or do some parks or trails or recreation centers need more loving care or help than others?
It really comes back to usage, because it is a double-edged sword. I talked about activation earlier and making sure that we're intentional about getting people out in the communities into their green spaces. But with that comes a higher level need of maintenance, because the more people that are coming through a space on a daily basis, the more maintenance it's going to require in order to keep the upkeep. But the inverse is also true. If a space is neglected, that is where we can see abhorrent behavior, or our housing insecurity problems become even greater. And so to me, it's like everything else, it's a balancing act. We've got to be intentional about looking at the spaces that are underutilized right now, and what do we need to do in order to foster more activation there, but also make sure that we're balancing that load out, because with 22,500 acres of parkland, there's enough space for everybody. We'll need to add more, but we've got to make sure that we're really thoughtful about how we do those things.
As I mentioned in the opening to this program, you have 450, give or take, full-time employees and about 1,000 part-time employees and a budget of $71 million. Do you have enough people? Do you have enough money to make the parks the best that they can be and to achieve whatever vision you may have for these parks?
That's a great question. And I think that the reason it's a great question is because it goes back to, what do we want to be? I would say that today we have the resources that we need in order to do what we're doing today. The question starts to become, as the community is asking us to do more, how do we evaluate what we're doing and whether we need to continue doing it, or how do we accommodate additional programming and additional spaces? And to me, it goes back to that utilization. You know, are the programs that we're doing, do they meet the needs of the community? And if they're not, how do we pivot? Now, that being said, I'll tell you, with 159 people coming into the community a day, we will likely have to grow. But how we do that and make sure that we're doing the right thing is, it's a difficult conversation to have. But again, if you don't have that conversation, you're not producing the best version of yourself. So it's a conversation we have on a daily basis and we'll continue to have.
What do you see as your biggest challenge?
I think the biggest challenge is that with that many different voices, it is making sure that we can weed through all that noise and distill it down. Because having worked in government for as long as I have, there is this tendency that the loudest voice in the room often gets the most oxygen. And I think that's important because those people are definitely passionate, but you want to make sure that you create a space where the people that don't necessarily pound the table or raise their voice, that they're being heard, because you've got to do both. And so making sure that we are accommodating the people that are very passionate, but at the same time, accommodating to the ones who aren't always afforded that space and that agency to really engage in the conversation, because you got to do both, or otherwise you're just, the squeaky wheel is getting the grease.
In April, your department, during your department's presentation to the county commission, you asked the county for $450,000 to hire more park rangers. Did you receive that money as part of your budget allocation?
I'd have to take a look. Again, that's the downside of being fairly new in this. I know that we asked for additional staff, not just in the park rangers, but across the board to meet our programming needs. And the presentation that we made before the Board of County Commissioners, we felt really met our needs at this point. It allowed us to do some additional program in the recreation centers to improve the trails and greenways that we've added in the last fiscal year. And so again, not that I'm tap dancing around it. I don't know off the top of my head, but I do know that we added capacity to the park operations team that the park rangers are a part of.
And do we need more people because the park system is growing or because we have inadequate staffing to serve the parks and the people who use those parks today?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think that if you were to take a look at our staffing model, again, I don't see a glaring need. I don't see a situation where we go, man, we're really under-resourced in this. But that being said, as we acquire land virtually every day and we then develop that land and add stuff, it's going to be, the need is always going to be there.
And there's a need for safety, and there are concerns about safety in our parks, as there are almost everywhere in the public sphere. We'll come back and talk about that with Nick Walker, who's the director of Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation, in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaOfSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. Nick Walker is our guest. He's the director of Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation. And certainly people want to feel safe in our parks. In fact, be safe in our parks. There have been several incidents, particularly in the vicinity of some uptown parks in the last year or so, which make those parks seem less safe. They may not be, but they seem that way, and perception is reality. So in your opinion, which parks need a security boost, and what form would that, or should that, take?
Well, so I think that you really addressed it by talking about the perception issue, because we have a team that works pretty diligently on working with asset and facility management, which is the group that manages security for the county. And they meet pretty regularly to talk about crime statistics and data. And what you'll find is that the rate at which criminal activity takes place in or near parks is at or lower than anywhere else in the community. But to your other point about perception, it is vitally important that people do feel safe in our parks. What I've found from having done this for a little while is that at the end of the day, focusing too much on enhanced security or patrols or those sorts of things isn't the real solution. The solution is activation of spaces. It's encouraging groups and families and activity to take place in the parks, because at the end of the day, that's really the only sustainable way to do this. If we allow our focus to solely be on enhanced security measures, truthfully, we will make a portion of the population who aren't there to cause problems feel uncomfortable in those spaces as well. And so to me, balancing those two things is vitally important. I'm really glad that we have a great partnership with CMPD and our partners in asset and facility management, because they spend a good amount of time making sure that we are truly doing meaningful things in order to make the patrons feel safe in those spaces. Well, it's something we're going to have to continually work on, because like everything else in life, it's so fluid. And what may be a quote unquote problem park today may not be tomorrow. And what may be a space in which people feel completely safe and would never think, oh, we need to do some things here, might become that. And so to me, things like our Ranger program, which is not set up to be a law enforcement agency, it is not set up to even delve into that realm, but it's eyes and ears. It's people coming into the park, working with the park users to make sure that they understand, you know, what's allowed and what's not allowed. And also, again, to be eyes and ears. And if they come into a problem or a situation, they're able to reach out to the appropriate agency to try to deal with that. But again, in 6 months of spending a good amount of time in our parks and on our greenways and communicating with our users, I think we've done a good job. Do I think we need to continue to do a good job and be innovative? Yeah. But I think we're doing a good job.
Well, let me ask about two things that you have done that relate to safety or the perception of safety. You've been putting trailer mounted solar power mobile security cameras in the parks, the parks that have become, I don't want to say hot spots, but that have experienced some criminal or dangerous activity. First of all, how do you identify those spots? Do these mobile cameras, are they there for the perception of safety? Have they caught people doing things and resulted in more safety? What has been the result of all this?
I'll say at a very broad, high level. It's like I talked about earlier, it's a tool. And it's a tool that can help us both identify what's going on in the park. And do we need to have more communication with our law enforcement partners about increased patrols and those sorts of things. But it's also, we're fairly early in the process of implementing those as an option. I'll also tell you, and I told the folks at the Park and Rec Commission this a few weeks back, that it is a Band-Aid. Because when you bring a camera in, there is an increased perception of safety, but it's also likely to become white noise in a relatively short amount of time. Having spent 8 years in Memphis, it was viewed as a salve. This will solve our problems if we put these blinking blue cameras up. And ultimately, they can become background noise. And so in my mind, it is a tool. Is it the solution to the problem? No, but it is something that we can implement and use it as a strategy to find longer term solutions in order to be able to address it.
You've also put the third party, you've introduced third party armed security personnel at our more urban parks, Romare Bearden Park, First Ward, Fourth Ward Park, King's Drive, the King's Drive section of the Little Sugar Creek Greenway. Why have you done that, and has it had an impact?
Well, so the thing that I find fascinating about this is that it is not a new thing. You know, for the last couple of years, we have implemented third-party security in some of the areas where we see an intersection between uptown activation and normal park usage. And so, again, like the cameras, it's a strategy that is used, you know, with patrols to make sure that we're monitoring areas where there are different populations coming in and out of the park. I would say that I think it's been successful. But again, it's part of a larger strategy that we really, again, we can't focus too many resources on any one of the 290 plus parks, because we do need to balance equity in there as well. And to your point earlier, things pop up in different areas.
You mentioned earlier in this conversation that CMPD has been a great partner in providing public safety in the parks, and yet you feel the need to hire third-party security in some of these areas. Why?
Because police aren't security. And I think unless you're hiring them in an off-duty capacity where they are a dedicated security function, we have to be real careful about that. And again, that comes from years of working with different law enforcement agencies. If we create a situation where we are asking police to be a monitoring service instead of a law enforcement agency, that's not really what they're built for. And so to me, balancing the different approaches pays better dividends, because, again, you want to use the right tool for the right job.
Our parks are taxpayer supported, which means they are for everyone. They are for old people, young people, children. They are for people who are completely capable. They're for handicapable people. But it's difficult to make that happen. And you, to that end, the county has all I didn't know this. This is amazing. Has all terrain wheelchairs that you can reserve at no charge at 5 different parks. This started last year. These vehicles will take you anywhere a totally able person can go. They look like tractors.
Yeah.
Has this proven to be popular?
It has. And again, I think it goes back to equity, because again, you know, I'm someone for whom I'm really grateful that last month was the celebration of the 35th anniversary of the Americans with Disabilities Act. I think that having an intentional lens and trying to find ways to where people are able to enjoy the amenities we have is great. It's a really neat partnership, really kind of led by the Board of County Commissioners and the County Manager's Office, where some ARPA funds were used to purchase these really unique vehicles. And again, I can tell you that other park directors and other agencies have reached out, because it's, in addition to being really cool, it's really impactful, because to get out into that space in nature, while it is easy enough for 90% of the population, there's a statistic that more than 10,000 people in Mecklenburg County are affected by a mobility disability. And so to make sure that we are creating the ability for everybody to use our things, I think is just, it's really cool.
This year, you say the county is focused on reinvesting in existing facilities, taking care of what we already have, as well as building some new things. You have updates, improvements planned for every part of town. For instance, users of Mallard Creek Recreation Center can take advantage of a new playground, fitness center, walking track, and more. Northwest Charlotte, Eva B. Barber Park now features a new playground and accessible shelter and pathways connecting various amenities. In Matthews, the Colonel Francis Beatty Park will have improved baseball field lighting, etc. So let's talk about some of the things that are coming soon. Let's talk about Latta Place, which used to be called Latta Plantation. It is being redesigned. How is that coming along? What should we expect, and when will it be open?
So the when will it be open is probably the one that I will tap dance on the most, just because construction projects of that scale, once you get in and start doing the work, who knows? But that being said, Latta Place, when you talk about the things that brought me here, was one that's of particular importance to me. My dad was a state park superintendent. I grew up in an historic state park. One that, unfortunately for some, the title of the Confederate capital of Arkansas was a source of pride. But again, I was fortunate that I had a father for whom that wasn't necessarily something that, you know, that he thought they should be beating their chests about. And so the programming and intentionality that I saw that he did there to make sure that everyone who lived in that town that ultimately became a state park, that their voices were elevated. I think the county has done an exceptional job of pausing and going, this needs to be a reflection of the entire community and not just the property owners who enslaved other people. And so the work that's been done there, it will be, again, a much more educational space, one that focuses on the indigenous, enslaved, and the property owners, the shareholders and the people who have preserved the land, which the county has had the responsibility for the last few decades. It'll be a blend of all three, because it is a place in the middle of a nature preserve. So the bulk of the property at Atlanta is about the environmental and ecological importance of the land. This space will have information about the people who were there against their will and the others, you know, who took care of the land before people came across the ocean and called it their land. So again, I think it's going to be really fascinating. There's a lot of information available on the county's website, including the latest drawings of what we anticipate constructing there. And as we get closer to the construction and the ultimate opening, again, we'll continue to share information because I'm really excited about it.
Only have a couple minutes left here, but I want to talk about Eastland Park, because that's on the site of the old Eastland Mall. It's called Eastland Yards now. I know that you're scheduled to or may have already broken ground on that park. It's only about 4.5 acres, but what will it offer when it's done?
So there will be recreational space. It's fascinating because it's obviously a multi-use project with several stakeholders, including the city of Charlotte and the developers who are going to put some mixed use in there. But the recreational component is obviously near and dear to my heart. It's an opportunity for us to put some recreation and leisure amenities in an urban space that, you know, used to be a mall and in a growing part of Charlotte. So it is going to be a neat opportunity for us to have some publicly accessible space in a neat reimagining of that overall property.
You were asked in a conversation you had with the Charlotte Ledger about how accurate the TV show, the sitcom Park and Rec was, and you said disturbingly.
Yeah, it is.
And Amy Poehler's character, Leslie Knope, yeah, in that show, she was endlessly optimistic in that, yes, role, in her director role of Parks and Rec. She was asked in that show what she had to say about people who come to these community meetings, yep, and who are passionate and loud in expressing themselves. Here's what she said.
Yep. These people are members of a community that care about where they live. So what I hear when I'm being yelled at is people caring loudly at me.
Is that how you feel?
Yeah, because it's also a defense mechanism, you know, but it's true. I mean, what I find for me personally is when you're able to find common ground with those individuals and those constituents, it's the most meaningful, because at the end of the day, it is cool when you can find what is their why and how can we connect on that. But no, it is. And it is true. We do get yelled at a lot.
And you said it was a disturbing portrayal, not only because it's what Parks and Rec are like around the country, yeah, but what working for government is like around the country. Only have about a, yeah, minute left, but talk about that for a second.
It is. I think I've told people a lot, because they would always ask me what I do, and I would say I compromise. And in my mind, you can compromise one of two ways. You can either compromise by finding common ground with people, or you can compromise on your vision. And again, I've done this long enough that I would much rather find a common ground with people than not provide the best service that we can do. But that is very much the stakes are so important to people, because this is their lives. These are the communities they live in, etc. But it also sometimes makes it difficult to just have a conversation. because they're mad. But once you get past the mad, you find the hurt and you find the way to help. And so to me, that show, it was funny, but it also had a really good heart, because I think that's true. I think that was what they did on that show. And I think that's what we do every day in government.
Nick Walker is the new director of Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation. I want to thank you for the hour and wish you the best and good luck with making our parks even better than they are today. Thanks for the hour.
I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.